Welcome. This is Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books, and I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And, yeah. We're actually recording at a completely different time and date.
And place.
Than normal. And place. Oh my god, all of it's different.
Everything is so different right now. There's sunshine.
Upside down, and we just ate a bunch of eggs and bacon and
breakfast. We needed some food in our bellies. We are at my house today.
Yes.
So if you guys hear dogs and cats and ghosts and stuff, just kidding, there's no ghosts here,
no.
Then it's because I have dogs and cats.
Although this book might bring ghosts to your house.
No, let's not. Let's not.
Yeah.
Unless it's like just in the book.
Never mind. Okay, so we're reading, or we did read, and are now discussing. That'd be weird.
Wait, what are we? What are we doing here?
What is this?
What's happening
here? That was a loud pop that I just made.
What?
This is why I have the screen, so that you guys don't hear that shit. We're a podcast.
Hey, yeah.
Did you know that?
If
that's
you
what
haven't.
You're listening to. That'd be crazy.
30 or so episodes in.
Or she just somehow stumbled upon a place that is playing this randomly and you didn't realize what it was. Ooh.
That weird. Would be cool.
Just an art installation that plays random podcasts.
Yes. They're just like put on a random shuffle and this one pops up.
All right. So, yes, we are a podcast. We read paranormal romance novels, novellas, short stories, all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about them.
Yep.
We break them down. We discuss them and laugh a lot about it.
We do.
Because it's fun.
It's
we
a
enjoy
lot of
the
fun.
Books, and sometimes, you know, silly things come out of these topics
mm-hmm.
and we laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are discussing First Grave on the Right by Dorinda Jones, and the audiobook was narrated by Lorelei King. So do you want to do it?
No.
But you love this book.
I do. I loved this book. I liked this book a lot. I don't know how well I'm going to be able to do Klitz notes. It's just not my thing.
We can't. Okay, fine. The basic ending of this, or not ending, but the whole point of this book, what we learn, is the Grim Reaper and the Son of Satan are in love.
Pretty much. I mean, there's a couple of stories in between trying to figure out where there's a bad guy happening. I don't know. It's really weird. You start off... Okay, I'm going to try. You start off with Charlie, who is the Grim Reaper. Her name is Charlie Davidson. Yes, like almost the motorcycle. So she's the Grim Reaper. She pretty much remembers her whole life. She knows every single language in the world. And, you know, she's just this normal chick that does Grim Reaping.
Yeah. So she basically sees... Ghosts.
She sees and she could touch and she interacts.
And interacts with them. They can see and touch her. She's very sparkly, so they get drawn to her. She's bright.
She's like the light.
She's a portal to mm-hmm. the other side. And mm-hmm. eventually she tries to help them pass on. Not mm-hmm. everyone, you know, not everyone does. Most people, when they die, just automatically pass on, go to wherever they're supposed to be. But occasionally ghosts linger. Something's undone. They need to finish something. Mm-hmm. And she kind of like finds them, or they find her more likely. While she's not interested in helping them, they find her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so she tries to like solve their issue and help them pass through her onto the other side. Because they're supposed to be somewhere else. They're not supposed to stay once they're dead.
And it's almost like the sixth sense in a way, where she can see and talk to dead people. She's the only one. She works as a private investigator, so she works really.
Well, we don't know. We know she's the only Reaper, but we don't know that she's the only person who can. Because like Rocket could see the departed before he died. Rocket is now
that's
a departed.
True. Yeah,
I mean, it's very early days for the series.
Yes, that's
and
yeah.
so. The whole world isn't being, it's being like
it's
slowly,
being
I mean, it's being developed, but it's also being slowly imparted to us. Like, she doesn't want to just sit down and be like, here's the world I built.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, she want to, you know, tell us in bits. The main character's learning shit, too. She doesn't know a bunch of crap at the beginning of this
mm-hmm.
book. She just is the Grim Reaper, and no one ever told her what that means. Like, there's no manual. She says at one point, where's my flowchart?
Like, yep.
Did you meet Death Incarnate today? Yes. Oh, girl, you're fucked. Sit down.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's Charlie. She's a private eye. This is Albuquerque. She works with her uncle, who is a police officer, a detective. Mm-hmm. Her father used to be, but he's retired. And her being a private eye allows her to help out on cases where, you know, the dead person's standing right there telling her, this is who killed me. Yeah. And she has to come kind of figure out how to use the police to find the evidence they need to actually make that stick. You can't just be like, well, the dead person said it was this, and that's not going to stand up in court.
Right.
Well, mm-hmm. if that's what happened.
And everybody is, not everybody, but a lot of people that are, like, there's Garrett, who's the other detective there that's trying to figure out how she's able to solve all of these crimes and stuff. So he's asking her questions about certain things, like, prove it, how do you know it, and while she's talking to the spirit or the ghost or whatever that's standing right next to her. So it's pretty interesting. I think it's really cool that she can interact and touch them.
Yeah, I like when she's like high-fiving them and everyone around her or hugs you and is just like, what is she doing? She's just like, she looks nuts.
She's interacting physically and she's speaking with them as well. So she just like flips open her phone, flip phones, guys, and like pretends like she's on the phone with this boy. She's actually talking to a ghost. And it's just the visual around their narrative is just so fun. And I loved it. I really got into this book a lot. It was mm-hmm. really cool for me. I listened to it a second time just to see if I could pick up on anything else, and I got a little ADD on that second round, but I liked it.
Yeah. I liked it. I wanted to like it more than I did, mm-hmm. and I think that we're going to have to discuss some of those pieces to it, that like where I mm-hmm. stumbled and fell, and you know where the book wasn't exactly right for me, but maybe was for you, which is cool. I mean, yeah. We don't always have to agree.
We don't, otherwise it would just be so
what a boring world that would be.
Kalina says something, Zaylet agrees. Next.
No, please, no. That sucks. So, I mean, that's, there is a, like, murder mystery plot happening. It is convoluted, and I don't feel like explaining it. And I don't think it really matters, because at the end of the day, the story is, like, her discovering, she's kind of piecing together different pieces from her past to mm-hmm. figure out, we discover who Reyes is, and Reyes is the son of Satan.
Yes.
Who has chosen to enter this plane as a human, is living as a human.
He's been pretty much sort of following her since he discovered her as a portal.
Yeah.
And then she was born and...
Well, he chose to be born 3 years first. Because he knew she was coming?
Yeah.
And so then his life went awry. He got kidnapped basically as a baby and mm-hmm. like sold around. And so his life didn't go like he thought. He'd put himself on a path to like grow up with her, because that was his goal. Because he like saw her and I think fell in love.
He fell in love.
And so he was like, that's it. I'm not going to do my son of Satan shit anymore. I'm going to go to Earth and be human and be in love with this portal Grim Reaper chick. But things don't always go as planned. And mm-mm. so his life took this turn, and she has met him a handful of times throughout her life. She met him once as Reyes, and the other times that he's popped up in her life, she didn't know it was him, that they were the same. She thought of him as, she called him the Big Bad, because mm-hmm. it was just this dark, shadowy figure she saw mm-hmm. that saved her a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Got her out of some really scary predicaments. And now this book is her kind of putting the two and two together to realize that they are the same. And this guy who she's been thinking about since she was 15, this Reyes kid that she actually met in the flesh, the kid, Reyes, mm-hmm. is also the Big Bad that's protected her whole mm-hmm. life. And then together, they actually are the son of Satan, and he is in love with her. And they fuck.
They do.
Spiritually?
So there's a lot of...
Because they are not both physically in their bodies at the same time.
No, they don't. I mean, the one and true sex scene at the end, they do. They get to physically touch. That's when she, a little bit after she realizes that Reyes is
bad. But he's there immaterially. He's not. Yeah. No, so they don't get to.
Oh, wait. Yeah, you're right. Because his body is in jail. That's right.
His body's in a coma in prison.
I didn't think of that.
So he's just there. Spiritually.
So she's having ghost sex.
I think she's having spiritual ghost sex. I think her soul leaves her body and they have sex soul to soul.
It's astral projective fuck, which is awesome.
But that's only what I'm thinking happens. I can't prove it.
That's so funny, because I mean, the way that it was described and the way that it was talked about was... I don't know. Obviously, you have to describe it and make it physical. Otherwise, how else are you going to fucking do it? But I don't know. I guess I just never really thought of it like that. That he mm-hmm. wasn't actually physically there. But then also I thought, he's the son of the devil. He kind of seems like he could just apparate and dissipate.
Well, he does at the end.
Which is, he just kind of shows up whenever he wants.
But I think the key is that he chose to become human.
Yes.
Like, he could have done whatever he wanted if he hadn't done that.
Right.
But I think he is bound by certain different, like, he didn't have memory until recently. He mm-hmm. didn't know that's what he was. He knew something. Like, growing up, he knew he had weird powers and stuff, but yeah. he didn't believe in them himself. And that's why he, you know, was in this abusive, like, his father was, not really his father, but whatever. The guy mm-hmm. who had abducted him was horrible and mm-hmm. abusive and all this, and he didn't really make him stop because he never really fully believed in his powers.
Right.
Because he didn't know who he was.
He didn't, yeah.
Because he chose to get rid of, like, lose that memory by becoming human.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's all... I'm sure a lot of this comes up in future books. Like, there,
oh, yeah.
She's on book 13 of this series.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, that just came out recently, so... You know, we've got a lot to learn.
Yeah.
There's a lot of world to build
yeah.
out from this very, very first book.
And there is a story happening behind all of the characters that she's building between Charlie and Reyes and Garrett and stuff, like, which we're not going to get too much into. But, I mean, she meets three ghosts. They're lawyers of a bad guy or that's not really a bad guy. And they get killed off. And anyway, so there's a story that she's trying to figure out there with them.
Yeah.
While also trying to figure out who the big bad is, who Reyes is, and then their love starts to blossom from there. But now you've got my mind all blown with the whole when they had sex that he wasn't there because he literally was in a coma that he woke up from. At the end of the book, he was no longer in a coma, but now he's just,
well, he woke up and then disappeared.
He disappeared, but
from prison. Now they're all like,
but when they fuck. Had sex,
I know.
Dude, I never thought... Okay, so, like, there's a lot of teasing scenes within this book where she just, like, where he just kind of shows up and he's, like, caressing her neck or he's grabbing her ankle or he starts teasing her. Like, I think in Cookie's office, he, like, sticks his hands down her pants, but he's... No one can see her or him.
Well, and he puts her hand on his dick.
On his... Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, the ghosts can see him. The three lawyer ghosts are sitting there going,
fuck. Yes. No, they thought it was hot. But, like, well, the humans, the alive people.
No other humans can see him.
So she's having this, like, weird, like, orgasmic attack. A sensual, like, situation happening against the wall in an office in front of her uncle and her best friend. And it's like... Wait, and Garrett, too. I think Garrett was in there.
Garrett and her and Cookie were there. Her uncle showed up. After. As it was happening. And, like, woke her up from it.
Oh, okay.
So but anyway. Didn't really see. But, yeah. Which the whole thing is very...
That happens a couple of times. It happens again in the shower. And then another couple. But he's... Because he is in love with her. He's there to make sure that she's all good. And that really just so that she can also do her job.
Well, he wants to save her. But then at the very end, he also says that if they find her, i.e. the agents of hell,
mm-hmm.
he will have to kill her.
Yep.
Because she is a portal to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So he was supposed to, it was supposed to be his job to go find the portal to heaven. Because that's where Satan wants, you know, Satan after his fall and the whole shit, Bible, religion, blah. he wants to go back to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent his son to find the portals, and he did, and he was like, no, she's too special, and I love yeah. her, and I'm not going to give this to my father. So he is protecting her, but then by being around her and being close, there's a chance that, because his father's looking for him, mm-hmm. doesn't know what's happened to him,
right.
that he will lead the agents of hell directly to her. And yeah. then if he does that, he has to kill her because he does not want them getting into heaven.
Yeah.
Because her physical existence as Charlie is less important than the portal to heaven.
Than her being the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's about...
Downer. It is a downer. And we all kind of discover that at the same time. So it's like he is starting to understand exactly what he is and what he's there for at the same time she is too, which is also the same, obviously, when we are.
Yeah.
And so after they fuck they only fuck the first time, the one time. But the second, like, orgasmic scene that she had, she gets a vision through him. And I think that's when he gets that vision too. And he was like, you weren't meant to see that. Now I know that.
Yeah.
If they find you.
Well, it kind of, yeah, it gives him that, but it also gives her the, like, knowledge that he saw her and that changed everything.
Yeah.
You know? And was like, as soon as he saw her, he knew that he was going to search for her until mm-hmm. he found her as a... Anyway. So, these are heavy topics, obviously.
They are.
And so the book uses a lot of sarcasm and snark and levity to kind of break what would otherwise be like really...
This would be a dark book.
Dark fucking yeah. shit happening in this yeah. book. But it all kind of like balances off of Charlie, mm-hmm. who is like Queen Snark.
Yeah, she's probably one of the quippiest characters that we've ever read.
Oh, 100% the quippiest.
Yeah.
Literally does not have a sentence or even a thought that isn't somehow a snarky comment.
I didn't find her. I really liked Charlie. I don't remember which other book it was, but there was another one that kept doing references back and tried to be real quippy, but was a little bit more snotty about it that really annoyed me, and I don't remember which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't find that in Charlie. Not for me.
Yeah, and I was a bit annoyed.
Yeah.
Because I was like, not everything you say has to be a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you can just say things.
Just talk.
And actually, that's how you impart information to people. I found her, like, I liked it. It was fun up until a point. Then mm-hmm. she crossed the line for me. Like, especially the conversation between her and Cookie, where we're finally getting a full backstory on all these incidents that she had just, like, alluded to throughout the book. She was finally going to tell... Cookie, all of it, like the history of when she was almost abducted by a child molester, and then she was almost killed, and this and that, like, you know, and her mm-hmm. stalker in college, and this, and like all the things that she was finally going to tell, because they were all part of the whole history of her with the big bad that she mm-hmm. kept calling in, now figuring out who he was and how he had been around her whole life. But in that conversation, she is so scattered, and like every other sentence is not about the conversation she's having with Cookie, but instead about like some random thought she had. And that it was too frustrating of me. Because then Cookie's constantly like, wait, go back, explain. And she's yeah. like, why won't she just pick up on this faster? And I'm like, because you literally haven't said the thing you think you've said. You have not told her. You're just saying small pieces and then thinking Yeah, basically, one of the chapter titles is like, ADD, or something, I have ADD, chicken.
Yeah.
And I'm like... And I know that's how she's being written, and I think it's interesting. For me, it was too much. Like, it took,
sure.
you know, it was fun, and then all of a sudden it crossed this line and was just like, I couldn't read it. I was very frustrated, and I just wanted her to tell us what was happening.
Just to get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally understand. I think how I would defend that would be, you know, when there's a topic that either one you don't know too much about or you're not comfortable talking about, you kind of make jokes about it. So, like, I'm going to give an example. If there is a situation where you're watching a movie and there is a gay couple making out or something, and someone that's uncomfortable with that situation, they're going to make fun of it. So they're going to derail from the actual topic of the story and then either make fun of it or say something that will make it less uncomfortable. So for her, I kind of feel like that's what she was doing. She wasn't quite sure where she was, what, you know, she's still trying to understand what it is that she needs to be doing as a Grim Reaper. I'm trying to figure out Reyes and trying to figure out the bad. So she's getting distracted because her mind is uncomfortable with trying to understand what it is that she needs to understand. That's how I pictured it. I am making that out to be a lot bigger than it is. I don't think that's not written into the book.
No, but I think you're right. I get that, mm-hmm. especially because in the context of she had just been almost killed by mm-hmm. being pushed through a plate glass window, like a skylight, and falling the full height of a warehouse.
Yeah.
I will give her the benefit of the doubt mm-hmm. that there was maybe a lot of things. Also, that was the longest day in history. From when she woke up that morning at like 4:30 when her uncle called her and said, you have to get down here to this crime scene, to when she got pushed through that
mm-hmm.
plate glass window, had to go to the hospital, and it was fucking midnight or 1 o'clock. And she was still talking to Cookie at 2, and I'm like, no. Too much has happened today, because like 17 things had happened.
A lot.
And I was like, like she'd gone to like two different prisons and a school and shit. I mean, everything had happened. Mm-hmm. And I was like, stop. We all need to stop. because it's too much for one day, go to bed, reset. But, no, I get it, and I think you're right. And I do like that she is a different character. Mm-hmm. Like, she's written differently, and it's a good perspective to have different people. I mean, you know, all of our heroines can't be the same fucking person.
That's so true.
This was interesting. It's just, my preference would be for her to have told the story a little bit more directly.
Sure.
Because I was like, just fucking tell me.
I think especially because of how the plot was written, like the story that was written into this book, like the book one. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have a story, otherwise it's just her laying out her scene mm-hmm. of trying to figure out who Reyes is and who she is. So this other crime that's happening is being written into it too. So I think that there's a confusion in that. So we as the readers are trying to understand her the same way she's trying to understand herself, while also trying to get the backstory and the story with the lawyers and the other people, mm-hmm. like the actual crime that's happening there, because Reyes doesn't have anything to do with that story.
No.
So with the lawyers, it's completely separate. So I could see that being a little bit scattered.
Two ticking clocks.
Yeah.
I think that's the difficulty. Mm-hmm. Is Reyes is in this coma in a prison and they're about to take him off life support because he's brain dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to keep paying to house mm-hmm. a brain dead prisoner. So she's under that ticking clock because she's trying to find his sister to prove that so that a family member can step in and be like, no, don't kill my brother,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. Because she doesn't want him to die. She's not afraid that if his body dies, she doesn't know what'll happen because he's not standard everyday human anyway. So right. It's real confusing. We don't know. Then we have the uncle that's in jail for what he didn't do in prison. And like there's there's so much else going on. Like that, I think that particular storyline got overly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell it by the fact that the bad guy at the end of the day was not introduced to this book until like 2 hours at the end. Until
the end.
Like no one mentioned him. Billy or whatever his name is. I don't even know. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Seriously didn't get brought up. His name was not, it wasn't even like a thought that this might be the guy who's behind everything. All of a sudden, with 2 hours to go, they're like, oh, it's this guy. And he runs children. He traffics in kids mm-hmm. and he runs these strip joints. And we knew he's a bad guy. And we've been investigating him from the beginning. And now we've proven it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he did.
None of that was in the first fucking 6 hours of this book.
He just fell into our laps. That's why it does seem like that whole crime scene, that story of it was an afterthought for sure.
I know.
So,
which is fine.
Yeah.
It's not mm-hmm. as important.
No.
What we really were getting is we're getting her interacting with different spirits and like kind of setting up how different ghosts accept death and accept their children. Mm-hmm. You know, like what's happening? Because like the three lawyers, two of them are okay, we just need to solve our murders and then we'll move forward. And the other one's like, I have to stay for my family because he had a wife and kids and it's harder for him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not doing as well. So he's concerned about that. Then you get, you know, like Angel, who works with her, he's a ghost who she like pays his mother.
Kind of. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's,
you know, because some of them choose not to go on. And, like, mm-hmm. we meet Billy in the correctional facility where he killed himself and he decided instead of passing on, he's going to stay and try to dissuade other inmates from taking their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Ghost does that. Neither does she. But whatever. That's what his choices are. So, like, everyone, you know, there's different ghosts and they do different things. Mm-hmm. They kind of have different approaches to this afterlife that they're in. Because they're not really anywhere right now. They're stuck on a separate plane that mm-hmm. can see this world but not interact with it, really.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Unless you're a special medium like Charlie is.
Well, Charlie can't. She can. Obviously. She's like operating on both planes mm-hmm. simultaneously. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's a good book, and there's a lot of funny shit in it. The chapter titles are one of the best.
That's so cool. I really love that was incorporated into the writing of the book. It was so brilliant.
It's so good, and I always, you know, I appreciate it because I cannot fathom how hard it would be. Like, I mean, I think at the top it would sound like a really good idea. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to name my chapter titles all these fun things. Mm-hmm. And then like halfway through the book, I imagine you're like, I cannot name another thing. Like, you know, I think it's hard enough to name fucking books. Could you imagine having to come up with something quirky and unique for each chapter? Oh, fuck.
We do that for each episode when we release. We have our one-liners that we have to go through and we sort of...
But those are things we've said.
That's true.
You find us saying a random thing. We didn't specifically come up with it.
Or like, try to research something to come up for.
It came out of the top of, like, out of the conversation. You just find it and, like, that's the quote we need for this episode. Yeah.
My favorite one of those was, I don't know, it was chapter 8. And it was, guys have feelings too, but, like, who cares? Inspirational poster. That was my favorite one. But there were some really, really good ones throughout the whole thing
It's fun, and it, like, breaks up the book a little, breaks up kind of some of the serious things. Another thing I really appreciated was Charlie has named her boobs and her ovaries.
I know!
And her boobs are named Danger, Will Robinson, and then her ovaries are Beam Me Up and Scotty. That's fucking great, and...
What is... That's my dog. That's Pancake. Yeah, I don't know what he is whining about.
Upset about something.
Yeah. I love that she introduces them, and then from then on, if she just says, yeah, and he grazed over Will, or not Will.
Will Robinson.
Is it Will? Well, yeah, he grazed over Will Danger. Robinson. He grazed over Danger and went over to Will Robinson, and it's just like, that's fucking perfect, because you got to meet them once, and then you know exactly who she's talking about. It's just, it's real funny. I enjoyed all the quips. I enjoyed all of the little, I don't even know what that's called, but the little things like that throughout the book that she really puts in there. There's a lot of character in there. And there were other, like, little aspects that she threw in. So, like, there's a ghost that she has in her apartment, and it's just this old Asian, like, really old Asian dude that just kind of hovers, and he faces in the corner. She woke up one day, he was there. She's tried to talk to him. Mr. Wong.
He was there when she moved in. He just...
Oh, that's right. He was there when she moved in. And then he's never turned around. He's never spoken to her. And he's just floating in the corner with his toes curled in. And it's... His story is sad. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is a sad story. It's just fun how she incorporates that kind of stuff, because during the sex scene, she's, like, trying to take her pants off, and then Reyes just rips it right off of her and throws it at Mr. Wong. It's just, like, it's she has to really, just like Kalina said earlier, bring in these lighter effects into the book, because there are so many dark pieces in it. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where it's the first scene that she actually physically meets Reyes. She doesn't know that it's bad yet, obviously, but he is like 17 or 18 and she is 15, and he, like, she sees him getting attacked by his dad, and so she tries to go there and help him, and then she's like, I'm gonna call the cops, are you okay? And he's like, leave me alone, you don't need to be a part of this. And did he know that was her?
Yeah, he called her Dutch.
He did, after he touched her, right? I don't know. Okay, but anyway.
No, the second they locked eyes through the window before she'd thrown
She knew it was him, or he knew it was her. Oh, okay.
That's why he was pissed, because he was, like, mad that she...
Saw him.
I think that she found him. Like, and then it was there, that she was there in that time, because he didn't know yet.
Yeah.
Like, remember, he was having, well, we find out later, from his sister, that during his childhood, he would have seizures. And when he had these seizures, he would go to her. It would be basically whenever she was in trouble and was having serious emotional stress, he would be called, like, his soul would be called out of his body and would go and help her.
That's when he.
That's
every time
what she would call the big bad, because she never saw him other than the cloak, like the kind of cape.
Yeah.
So she would just call it the big bad, but that was him. Meanwhile, his body was back, and he didn't know how to do that growing up.
Yeah.
It just would happen, and he'd have a seizure. But he had seen her, because by then he'd saved her, I think, twice. So then to have her show up in real life, because remember, he thought it was fake.
Yeah.
His sister said that he just thought it was a place he would go in his mind when he was having these seizures. He didn't realize that it was a real person that he was drawn to. And then all of a sudden he's being beat by his dad, and through the window he looks over, and there she is, the person who he's been going to for safety for his whole life. Is there. Yeah. And so it, like, triggered a lot in him, and he was emotional and upset, and then, like, she broke the window and got the dad off of him, you know, like, he ran away, tried to chase him, and they ran. I mean, that got real confusing. I couldn't tell. There was alleys and shit was happening. And
that was one of the dark scenes in it, particularly because she was only 15 years old in it. And so, like, I don't know, it took me back to, like, when I listened to My Favorite Murder, and they're talking about, like, really, you know, fucked up murder stories, because that's what they do, and it's fucking awesome. Well, they're awesome, not them. but anyway, not the murders. And so they're having this interaction with each other, and she has no idea who he is, but she's already really drawn to him and stuff, and he knows who she is. But it got really dark in a sense that he takes her by the neck.
Oh.
And then he
had his hand all over her neck this whole book, and I had flashbacks. Another fucking book Francesca? About... Nope. Book that shall not be discussed anymore.
But he had her by the neck, and he was like, have you ever been raped? And have you ever... It was upsetting. And then he, stuck his hand down her pants and, cupped her, and I was like, she's 15. It just got... I think that's why... It definitely is the reason why Charlie is... the way she is. She'd been fucked up her whole life. If he wasn't there to save her from all those other situations. The irony in this particular situation is that he was doing that to her. He didn't hurt her. He'd let her, he was just like, you need to go. And she left. But even still, that was just like, I don't know. I'm not bothered so much that it was written into the book. It was just it was a very disturbing scene.
Yeah, I didn't understand it.
It was weird.
I didn't know why that had to be their first interaction. Yeah. Why it had to be so, why he had to grope her.
I felt that
they could have just had, an emotional pull. Immediately see each other and go, there's something here, and not understand it. Mm-hmm. And that could have been the way that scene went. And she could continuously relive that scene because she was constantly thinking about rape. She did that. That happened when she was 15, but... Yeah. He was part of her mind the rest of her... she was always how do I find Reyes? And she went back the next day and found out that the family had moved. Mm-hmm. And all she got was the name and all this stuff. So it just didn't have to be...
Yeah, it could have been...
...gropey, and I don't know why it... I tried to figure out why. Why the author would make that choice. Mm-hmm. Why did that have to happen... what did that give her in her future? Because she already had a bad enough life.
Yeah.
I felt like it was piling on. Because she sees dead people. And from day one. So her mom dies in childbirth with her. And is her first soul to pass through her to the next world. And she remembers it.
Yes.
She remembers her birth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the moment right following birth.
Yeah.
And she knows everything that happened. And Reyes was there and called her Dutch. And... her mom died, and her dad had to tell her that her mom died, and she knows it. She remembers it from minute one.
Yeah.
And then, she understood people. She couldn't communicate because she was a baby, mm-hmm. but she would understand. She would see the departed. She tried to explain that. No one believed her. Her stepmom, who her father married when she was only a year old,
mm-hmm.
does not respond well to this situation. She really goes on the path of, this is bullshit, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and from the age of four, when they have that incident where she tries to explain that the little girl who died is there,
mm-hmm.
and everyone flips out because the little girl's missing. They don't have the body yet, right. No one handles it well. Obviously, there's a missing little girl mm-hmm. involved. And there's now a 4-year-old saying, oh, I see her, she's right here, she's playing.
Right.
So that's scary, and all the adults freak out, and stepmom slaps her, and blah, 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 blah. So she has a hard, and then, from then on, stepmom is obviously obsessed with her sister, her older sister, mm-hmm. and, she can do no wrong, and Charlie can do no right, and somehow dad doesn't fix it or help in any way. He obviously believes her. He gets down and believes, he's on mm-hmm. the side of Charlie's seeing things, mm-hmm. and she can... She's not crazy. This is real, and I have to believe her. But he doesn't... I know you can't make somebody else believe it, too, but I just... there was a better space there for him to...
He didn't step up and defend her against Denise, against the stepmom, which he absolutely should have.
He just lets them hate each other for
mm-hmm.
20 years, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just well, that's uncomfortable. Yeah. So now there's this weird, uncomfortable family dynamic, and, she told her best friend in high school, and her best friend never spoke to her again, and, nobody, the police don't believe her, and they all think she's crazy. So she walks this world where she's just so hard already, and then they have to have this weird gropey scene with Reyes, and it's supposed to be sexy, but it's not. I don't know.
It could have just been that he could have just been that guy that was just I had the word earlier, I don't remember it anymore, but it could have been just that he just overlooked it all and just pushed her away, and just that could have been written just like that, to continually say, get the fuck out of here or else I am gonna hurt you, instead of doing the touching. Charlie is so put together. Like, she functions, to me, so normal in a way. And I fear that in the books coming, that she is really going to have a moment of realization that her life really is fucked up. And that she's going to have a breakdown from it. Because her coping mechanism is to be quippy and to be sassy and to do all of that. Which is great if that works for her. But well, I don't want it to, like, backfire on her later on.
And I mean, up until this book, in this moment with Cookie, where she really explains everything, her whole life, all these different experiences, mm-hmm. she's never told anyone the whole of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's upsetting. Like, you've got to talk about this kind of crap.
Yeah.
So I do. I think she's a completely broken person mm-hmm. that doesn't realize she's broken.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to start coming out at
yeah.
some point. Because yeah. you cannot keep holding this shit together.
No. You can't keep putting on that mask.
Yeah.
I mean, unless, if that is the way that you escape and that you deal with it, that's fine too. But you have to come to the realization soon that what you're trying to mask is just building up. And it's just hidden inside of you. And you're going to have to let that escape. So mm-hmm. I think that's the good thing about her finding out that bad is Reyes. You know, it sucks. She was terrified of him when she realized he was this. At first, she thought he was Satan. But then she realized he's just the son of Satan. Or he told him. That's it. But, you know, then she's just happy now that Reyes has woken up from his coma. She knows exactly who he is. But now he can't tell anybody about me because he has to kill me. So, obviously, that's leading on to the next part of the books. But that just puts on a bigger load on her shoulders. Now she's got a lot more shit to think about. So, I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on.
It's so intense.
It's so intense. And if you take out the humor and her quips and how sassy she is and the funny titles of the books, or of the chapter, this book is dark.
You would just cry all.
This whole book is
would
dark.
Just make you cry.
Yeah. It's pretty, it's dramatic in that dark sense. I think I like the dramatics. I like it. I don't know, like, for some of the other books that I got really into, those were dark too. Like, that mm-hmm. story was dark. Like, the, in Kodiak Point, where she was captured and kept as a servant her whole life. Like, that's dark shit. You don't... I don't know why. My favorite Disney is fucking Beauty and the Beast. That's, like, Stockholm mm-hmm. Syndrome. The whole fucking... You know, it's just it's dark shit.
Yep.
So, maybe I have a twisted mind that I just don't understand.
You are dark and twisty soul.
Dark and twisty. But anyway, yeah. So,
yeah.
There's that. Hey, let's talk about the sex.
Yes, we should talk about it.
We should. Can we step away from the fact that I think that it didn't happen, but it did happen. But
oh, it straight up did happen
with an incorporeal, corporeal,
incorporeal.
It was a
yeah. We can ignore all that. Let's just talk about.
So
in the very beginning, she's been having sexy dreams for a month, and she's mm-hmm. been getting off in her dreams.
Yes.
And they've just been hot as hell, and she's like, I don't know where this is coming from. Mm-hmm. I've never had a dream like this before. I've never had a spontaneous orgasm at night before, but this is happening, and it's been happening for a month. And then she's in the shower, and it happens in the shower. She's mm-hmm. like, I don't think I fell asleep. So it's not just somebody invading her dreams. Now right. it's somebody who can somehow be physical with her without being there.
Yeah.
So we have a very nice shower scene where he's grabbing her from behind
mm-hmm.
and he's putting his hands on her hips and pushing mm-hmm. up against her, and mm-hmm. she's grabbing his cock with her hand. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Guys,
yeah.
I do love shower scenes.
I know.
I don't love shower sex.
As much fun as they aren't in real life.
I'd much rather listen to them and watch them than...
They really are just described so well.
It really tricks you into believing that shower sex is great, and then you try it and you go, God damn, it's bad.
I know. But even just, like, I don't even remember the details of it, but even just listening to you talk about it, I'm right? just like, ooh, it's squishy. You know, because you... You're just anticipating that type of feeling with it. And she's...
Well, and it's warm and it's moist and slick and ugh.
I think the greatest thing about that is that in here, this is a love story. Not that the whatever we haven't read before haven't been love stories. They're all love stories. But he, since the beginning of time, has been...
Pretty much.
Following her. Like that.
I think it was around the Big Bang.
I mean, all the other ones have been alive for millennia too, but this is from the beginning of time, where he is just like, I love this being. This is the being that I want to be with. That's commitment, dude.
Yeah.
For sure.
Especially from the son of Satan.
From the son of Satan. That's just the best. So the actual love scene at the very end was pretty hot.
Oh, God. It was so good.
That was so good. You guys have to listen to it. It was just the Lorelai King.
Yeah.
Awesome. She did a great job. She's got a couple of accents that she does. I love her Reyes. At first, I was a little bit like, I'm not sure about it. But towards the end, when he has a little bit more dialogue.
He does not talk. Because
he doesn't talk in the beginning. He says like three words to her. He's like, you're tired. Or something like that. But then he has obviously more dialogue in the end. I'm like, I'm in love with the son of Satan. I think he is sexy.
Hells yeah.
I love how she does his voice. Because I really like the quiet kind. The kinds that don't talk a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The kind that just kind of shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't
just sit in silence. Let me be the crazy one. I can talk. But he's like soft-spoken and he's really quiet and into it. I mean, he's not annoying. I'll just put it like that.
Nope.
But I like Reyes. I like me some Reyes.
Yeah.
He's sexy.
He's very sexy. They build those sons of Satan well.
Yeah, they do. So towards the scene, he's just like, I want to take this slow. I want it to last. So let's not rush this. She's like, fuck you. I want to fuck. So she like they're like making out, and then they take off their clothes and throw it at Mr. Wong, and then like. He's just taking his time with her and stuff. And she's like, come on, come on, come on. And so she flips him over and straddles him and just impales herself on him, is what she said. And then he, like, holds her down. He grabs her hips and he holds her down. And I lost my shit at that scene. I was like, no, yes, yes, no, yes. This is so fucking good. It was so good because he was just like, you could just feel the intensity in this scene and the way that it was described, the way that Lorelai read it. He grabbed her hips and he held onto her, and you could just feel in yourself that moment where you're like, fucking let me go. I need to grind this. I need to rock this. Let me do it. And he just fucking held her.
He's like, we gotta hold on.
And then he flips her back over, and then and then it's all glorious from there. But it's just like, oh my God, it was one of the best. I fucking loved it. It was so good.
Yeah.
Read it. Write it. Not write it. Read it.
Read it? Yeah. No, dude.
Listen to
it's
it.
It's good.
It was good.
And it was... Because... So there's a lot of, like we said, that's the only sex scene, and it is at the very end. But there's all these little bits that tease you in the lead up to it, because they keep showing up and, like, hanging out together, and, you know, he keeps coming to her, and they're good. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's a nice, slow build to a really good, intense scene.
Mm-hmm.
I want more of. I'm really concerned about their ability to maintain a relationship, considering that now he's like an escaped convict, I guess, but not even
twice. Like, he's double an escaped convict. He's escaped from the hell. Human jail and from hell.
I know. <That's> so hard.
Yeah,
that is going to be a real difficult life to lead. Mm-hmm. Also, she basically works for the police.
Yeah,
who are going to be looking for him because he escaped from prison.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
There's a lot more going on. And what I wonder is, I wonder if there are other Grim Reapers in the world. I wonder if they're going to be introduced, like, you're a Grim Reaper of the Northern Hemisphere. You know what I mean? Because I feel like, here's something that crossed my mind almost throughout the whole book was, she's got to have a lot more people try to pass through her. So she's got to take that time to allow that to happen. Or does she just kind of like walk down the street and they're just passing right through her? You know what I mean?
Well, I think the way they kind of get around it is it felt like most people go on their own. Like they pass when they die.
Okay.
They're like, they either already are slated for heaven or hell and go right away. It's only the very small percentage that seem to stay that she's supposed to help. But yes, obviously they aren't all coming to Albuquerque. However, at one point, Reyes said that the God of Man does not create reapers often. So he had been waiting for her because it's not like there's always one.
Okay.
At least that was my interpretation. It was a very small piece of the book. But it seemed to be that he was implying that he saw her in the beginning of time, the portal, and knew that was the one he was waiting for. And then over the history of humans, God created a couple of reapers, and then he'd be disappointed because they weren't her. And then all of a sudden she came. Mm. I don't know.
No,
this is all speculation.
It has to be all speculation. We interpret our books so, I mean, obviously the way you do and the way I do, which is I don't pick up on some of that kind of stuff too.
Uh-huh.
That's why you're here. It's so that you could explain the book versus just living through whatever interpretation it is that I do. Because I get a scene and I fucking stick with it for the next 10 minutes and I miss half of what I just listened to. So,
well, this book was hard because it didn't flow in a, like I said, some of the like plots were very confusing. And then because she seemed to have ADD.
Yeah.
It was hard to follow the story because she was all over the place.
Yes. She was.
And so I don't blame you missing things. I was the whole time like, back up, back up, back up. Like jumping back and forth trying to fucking figure out. They at one point they went to a warehouse and I was like, why are we at a fucking warehouse? And they were just like, remember this thing we have to do. And I was like, where'd we get this info from?
It's so funny.
And it took re-listening to it to go, oh, right, the lawyer was supposed to go to the warehouse, and that's where they are, and that's why they're scoping mm-hmm. it out, and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many pieces where I was like, huh?
Yeah.
What? Whoop. And so, but I think at the end of the day, none of those are really important.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff between her and Reyes is what's going to carry yeah. through for future books mm-hmm. and be important.
Yeah.
That's the stuff she has to hold on to. And, like, that we need to learn if we're going to keep reading this, yes. this book so we yeah. can understand what's next. What's, but, yeah. like I said, you know, Dorinda's on book 13, so
yeah.
we are behind.
I think something good that Dorinda portrays a lot in this book is the emotional capacity, I guess, of her characters. You could really feel the emotions in I want to say particularly the ghost. So say like Elizabeth, she's one of the lawyers that was murdered. And she's a little funny, but she's not as sassy as Charlie is. But you could really touch on the emotions that's happened, like her acceptance of her death and the fact that she couldn't smell her niece's hair. Or, you know, and she really wants to let her sister know that everything's going to be okay and stuff like that. Those emotions that she was having, the ghosts that were murdered or not even just those ghosts, but all the other ghosts too, the way that she was portraying their feelings and written it out, I think was really beautiful. Because talking about that kind of stuff and being in that realization, being the one that is dead and talking about that, it's got to be a hard thing. I mean, and that sounds really stupid because obviously we don't know that feeling.
We don't know. Yeah, no, and but not only is it hard if you were dead and having that experience, but trying to portray that, but we, especially as Americans, do not handle death well. So this whole book was an exercise in trying to deal with and explore these topics
mm-hmm.
in ways that are just not typically done and that are not typically comfortable, you know? So yes, it's fiction and it's a story for fun. It's not supposed to be some great like treatise on death and right. how Americans handle death.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of the point. Like that's something about this book that's very intriguing
because
mm-hmm. it's not necessarily as light as some of our others
right.
because it is still dealing with a very real topic.
Like yes.
people die. That happens.
Yeah.
All the time. Somebody's dying.
Hey, know? Here's another topic that we don't really agree, not really agree on, but that we have different views on, so.
Yeah. And I think that's our yeah. kiss and tell for this episode is mm-hmm. death.
And talking about death.
Talking about death and.
Yeah. So. This is not a topic that I typically like to talk about. Obviously, I just turned 36. I'm at that point in my life where it's going to happen. I mean, it has always happened. It's inevitable. I know it just sounds so... ignoring it, you can't ignore it, for one thing. And it's happening all around you. And you, the feelings and the emotions that come along with it are just so... they're hard to deal with. But talking about it, especially with the people that you love or anticipating it with the people that you work with or that you love or whatever, is so difficult. I don't like to talk about it. I don't like to think about it. I don't like to plan for it. I don't ignore it when it happens, obviously. I try to be there as much as I can for the people that it's affected. But when it comes down to my time to take care of that, when it happens to the people closest to me, I don't know how well I'll be able to handle it. I can't even talk about it without, like, I would rather talk about ghosts right now. I would rather talk about something terrifying or scary. Well, I guess that is to me. The whole death topic is like, but I would almost like, I would rather crack jokes. I am Charlie in this situation where I don't want to face that. I don't want to talk about it and to deal with it. I want to just turn my head and watch a comedy show. Mm-hmm. I like to ignore it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a very difficult thing.
That's very typical, I think. Mm-hmm. It's especially typical of our particular culture. I think it's detrimental. Because it is just a natural part of life. I also think it's easier for families to handle if they've done some time, spent some time talking about it.
Sure.
And not made it such a scary, like, end of, you know, like, oh my god, this is something I only have to deal with while I'm in trauma of having experienced the death. It would be easier if we had, you know, planned. And I think part of it is just the way I see it. But then a secondary layer is I work with seniors. Mm-hmm. Like, my agency is a seniors agency. Mm-hmm. And so our clients die all the time. It's what happens. And you could be very upset about that. Or I think we're in a unique position where our clients are all seniors. They're yeah. old. They've lived their lives. And mm-hmm. these aren't, fortunately for us and fortunately for, you know, what we're working in, it's not tragic sudden death.
Right.
Like, that's a whole different, like, that's, I'm not talking about that because that's stuff that you can never prepare for
right.
and is a much different situation than just let's talk about the act of aging, how society deals with aging, and then at the end, death. Mm-hmm. And so I'm more of a mind that it would be healthier to have a plan and to discuss it openly and with your family because it's then there's not things being decided in trauma because
mm-hmm.
that's harder. That adds to the level of stress and difficulty of it. And then also, just personally, I don't think death is scary. It's just part of life. It's mm-hmm. how, it's just the natural order of things.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've kind of touched on it before in my absolute hatred of immortality.
Yeah.
And how much I cannot stand that every yeah. one of our books, people are fucking immortal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, stop being immortal. Who wants to live forever? That's nonsense. Because the power of what this, of what life is and what every day is, has meaning due to the fact that it is finite.
Yeah.
There's a finite amount of space and time that you're going to experience.
Yeah.
And so you should live for that and experience that to its fullest because it's going to end. Now, whether you believe in an afterlife or not kind of changes things, but that's all personal. I don't. I think it's very easy to understand that this is it and it's done. And I don't need anything more.
Sure.
Because all I can experience is this. That's where I am now.
So. I think that's beautifully put. I'm in the same boat with you as far as afterlife goes. I think, I mean, if there is a spirit or a soul or anything that we are left behind, it just goes back into nature. It goes back into the power and the beauty of human life was. Back into the air or the trees or literally the dirt that we came from.
That's where we
go. All you know,
our
yeah.
atoms go
yeah.
back to stardust at the end.
Exactly. And I think you're right. I think the topic of the sudden or the unexpected is definitely a harder thing to deal with. But even so much as, like, for me, planning, fucking calling your dad so I can start a will is hard for me. But I need to get it done. I've yeah. got children. I've got things that I need to pass on. I understand it. I accept it. It's something, obviously, it's inevitable. But that step to go and actually make things finite, as you say, like, mm-hmm. I'm passing down everything on to my boys. It's very difficult.
Don't you think you'll feel better if
no.
you just do
yes.
it?
No, 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 no. Absolutely.
Whereas not doing it is now constantly stressing you out about it.
It is. No, I get it. I 100% agree with you. I think it is the best for my interest, for my boy's life, for Dan, for all of us. I absolutely should do it. I will do it. It will come. One, I'm not going to take that step to make that happen, even though that I know it's mine because you're my friend and that's your dad. But
it's there are just other lawyers.
I know. No, I know that. I don't want to go to anybody else but your dad. But it's still, I don't know. It's just so hard. I don't even like to talk about it. Like, Dan and my dad had this conversation about how my dad wants to have his own. I was just like, I don't want to hear it. This is not something. And Dan's like, you need to hear this. Of course. Your dad is talking to you right now. You don't get to walk away from that. He is having a serious conversation about what happens when he goes, because he knows and he understands it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you need to add respect for him and his feelings, his belief, and everything he's done for you. You need to sit down and listen to him. And I gave Dan the death stare, the not so death stare. And then actually still don't think I sat down for that, but it's hard. I know it needs to be done, and I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it kicking, screaming. I'm going to be crying the whole time, but I know that it needs to be done.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean, you're not unique. I mean, you're not alone.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I just read for our fun fuck fact. I read an article called Death in American Society, Why Do We Fear It? Which just pretty much sums up mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty long article, so I'll just summarize a couple of things that I think were salient from it. Like, one, that because of our, like, America's fierce individualism and specifically, like, profound, like, hero worshipping, mm-hmm. they at one point they say death is profoundly un-American because it is the defeat of the self. Whereas, like, we're so individuals, like, we can do anything. Yeah. And, like, you just, if you put your mind to it, you can be mm-hmm. like that go-getter American spirit of everything, but mm-hmm. eventually you die, and that's mm-hmm. like, how fucking un-American is that? And die? Like, that's not cool.
Un-American to die.
Then another piece that I think is key is that death wasn't always like this. In America, the tipping point, the kind of the transition seemed to be the Civil War. Before it, families took care of their dead. Mm-hmm. It was done in their house, especially Victorian era, like, it was done... Not Victorian, but it was done in the homes, like in the parlors. That's where you would lay out your dead mm-hmm. and you would mm-hmm. grieve and you'd have your big party and the family would get to say their goodbyes and it was personal and it was part of life. Mm-hmm. And then they would do the burials and everything. But the Civil War, so many dead happened. So many.
Yes.
On a scale that we had not experienced before, that they started having to farm out the transition to funeral directors and funeral houses because there was too many dead.
Yeah.
So the families couldn't manage it all themselves. Also, they were being killed in battles mm-hmm. away from home and stuff like that. So all of a sudden we started to take the process out of the home, and families no longer did it personally. And so now when someone died, they would immediately, there'd be no time for the family to deal with it. It would, the body would immediately go to the mortuary, get dressed, mm-hmm. put in a casket, and then get buried. So we became unfamiliar with it. Before, it was familiar and it was part of our, you know, family like existence. And now it isn't. Now it's so separate and
we've disassociated ourselves yeah. from that. And yeah.
So now death is so unfamiliar mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it happens and then you immediately put it away. That's part of why we are struggling mm-hmm. to reassociate ourselves with it. And then we don't have any truly American festivals or cultural heritage mm-hmm. like other countries do that celebrate death. Mm-hmm. Dia de los Muertos in Latin America, where mm-hmm. it's like we embrace this, our families come back together, we celebrate all of our past relatives mm-hmm. on this day, and it's not sad, it's mm-hmm. joyous. But America doesn't have those. We don't have the Buddhist understanding of reincarnation and the circle as you mm-hmm. spiral up to nirvana and stuff like that. So it's very...
Yeah, Cambodians have Bon Ben, which is a celebration of the ancestors that had lived before you. So we go and then we celebrate the lives that they lived and offer money to the temple so that they can keep those traditions. And we give them food. We do. We give our dead food and
sure.
just tons and tons and tons of blessings all day long. So it's, it's celebrated. Yeah. For sure.
And we bury them and hide them away. Like, it's not... That, so I think yeah. it's part, you know... It's something that as a culture we need to like start looking at and figuring out how to reintegrate death into our understanding of how to live life. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be healthier.
I agree.
Someday.
I don't like it.
Nobody but I agree. Likes it. But it doesn't matter.
Sure. No, for sure. Absolutely.
And so, I think that it would, yeah.
That article came from Medium.com, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Just to source it out.
Yes, yes. It was written by Alex Vallejo. Bahayo? Thank you.
Bahayo?
Sorry. I'm sorry, Alex. I should have been able to say that better. But yes, it was called Death and American Society, Why Do We Fear It?
Yeah.
All right. Medium.com. So if you want to. It's a pretty good article. It's just, like I said, it was pretty long, so I didn't want to.
Yeah.
There's too much to.
You clicked notes the shit out of that.
So that's our, like, I don't know. This was a little bit of a, maybe it's because we just ate a bunch of food.
Maybe.
I'm feeling lethargic.
We're a little in a food coma. It's like a, we're yeah.
Because we haven't been.
This book was dark too, though. I think we're setting the mood for it. I mean, it was sexy. The sex scene was sexy. There was sexiness, but this book was dark.
It was dark, but I really think people need to understand, like, it was light, like, you know,
she made light of the darkness,
but it was so funny and so we talked about it in a much more serious fashion than this book is.
That's true.
We really dug through and, like,
we did
parsed out we did the funny parts and we're like, let's focus on all this death. Let's really roll around in that grave.
Oh, we turned this one around.
But really, if anyone, like, hasn't read it and now goes and reads it, they're going to be like, this book's fucking hilarious. Yeah, what is wrong with these
books? Very few of our books have made me laugh out loud, and this one definitely did. There were moments where we would just be sitting there and I'd be like, bah! And I have a very boisterous laugh. So it's annoying to my kids. But anyway, yeah.
All right. So yeah, ratings. What do you think?
I truly, truly enjoyed this book. I loved it a lot. I think sex-wise, teasing-wise, and all that stuff, I'm going to go ahead and give this one an 8. And as far as storyline goes, I'm going to say particularly the love story being introduced with the Grim Reaper and the Son of Satan.
Just remember that. That's why this book is funny and not serious.
Yes, that's exactly why.
The Grim Reaper's in love with the Son of Satan.
I'm going to have to give this one a 9. I fucking love this. This is one of my favorites. I love this one a lot. And it was funny, darkness aside, but even the darkness I liked. Mm-hmm. Even though we only had one sex scene, the teasing and all of that stuff leading up to that, I think it was a 8. So I'm going to have to go with an 8 and a 9 for me. So 8 for the sex, 9 for the overall book.
The sex is good. I think it's closer to like an 8. Because I just would have liked a lot more.
Sure.
I assume we get more in the other books. Yeah. But, so yeah, it's about an 8. I mean, it was good. It turned me on. The book I'm really, like, closer to, like, a 6-7 on, I think I just needed her to focus. I was like, stop, focus. And if I was a cookie, I would have shaken the shit out of her.
She wanted to.
I would have been like, shut up. Answer only the direct questions I ask, because the way you're telling this is not acceptable.
Awesome.
It's not following. It's not coherent. So, 6-7 for story and like an 8 for the sex scene.
All right.
That's what I would, yeah.
Perfect.
All right, guys.
All right. So, on to our next book. We are going to be reading Atlantis Rising by Alyssa Day. It's going to be narrated by Joshua Swanson. We've had Alyssa Day on our list before. We actually met her very briefly at the Shameless BookCon 2018. And Abigail Owen actually also recommended her to us. So we're going to take that and we're going to run with it. And that'll be our next book.
Yeah. So come back. Join us for that. Atlantis Rising. And in the meantime, reach out to us on social media. We are Sturdy Books. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or sturdybooks@gmail.com is our email. And all of that is with 3 H's. S-H-H-H.
And visit us on our website at sturdybooks.com. And follow us on all of the podcast platforms. If you guys can please go rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, that would be great. We're really trying to get up there. We're trying to get out there and meet new people and try to get out to our listeners. Hopefully you guys and more people out there. So thank you for joining us. And quick shout out to Jim Townsend.
Yes.
For our music.
Wonderful. And we'll see you in a bit.
Yep. Bye. See ya.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Galena and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Get some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.